Tell me if you had this experience. You get up one morning, you check your email, first thing you see is a link to a video that a friend of yours sent. You go check Facebook, and one of the first things you see there is that a friend of yours posted the exact same video on her profile. You then go to lunch with two other people, they're talking about some video they saw online, and as they talk, you realize, hey, that's the same one you saw this morning. By the end of the day, you see this video everywhere. It's gone viral. Well, let me tell you something. I don't want to be on the sidelines watching this happen. I don't want to be on the receiving end of videos like this. I want to be the kind of person who creates content that spreads virally across the internet in this way. That's why I spoke with Heaton Shaw. He is a partner at ACS, a company that helps other websites get traffic by using search engine optimization and viral marketing techniques. And I asked Heaton to teach you and me how we can make our stuff more viral. And here's how we structure the conversation. Spend a little bit of time finding out about his company because I want you to see how he built his company. And there's a lot for us to learn from that. Then we moved on to finding out how to make our content viral. And finally, the third portion of this conversation is all about how to make a web business, a web tool viral. So if you're trying to make your company viral, this is the interview to listen to and then pass on to your employees. All right. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. You're about to listen to my interview with Heaton Shaw. Here it is. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So in 2003, I started a consulting company. We started out doing search engine optimization and search engine marketing. And by about 2005, when things like Dig, Delicious, StumbleUpon started becoming popular, we, you know, kind of moved on to the trend of social media marketing, as they call it, which means understanding the audiences in on these social sites and helping content spread on these social sites and through the internet. And that includes YouTube videos, blogs, and things like that. So we've been running the consulting company for a little over five years now, and that's where our experience comes from. We have helped a ton of companies, whether it's some Fortune 500 companies like HP, Samsung, AOL, all the way down to, you know, a startup that just got funded last week. In 2006, we launched a product called Crazy Egg. It creates heat maps for where people are clicking on a page. It provides a very visual representation of kind of click activity on a page.
You didn't say the name of your company. Can you say it now?
Yeah, it's ACS.
How did you come up with that name?
Actually, there's a story on the website on our about page about it. Mm-hmm. Basically, we didn't know any better about naming anything at the time. This was in 2003 when, you know, our knowledge wasn't anywhere near where it was today. So I started this company with my brother-in-law, and we were just thinking one day, and we wanted it to have an A in it. So it would be at the top of a lot of lists. We would have put a number if we had realized that numbers are higher than the alphabet. And we just came up with a name. And the name kind of sucks, quite frankly, but it is what it is.
I asked that question not because I didn't know. I did read it on your website, but it seems to me that that says something about the way that you guys work. You're not so interested in coming up with a pretty name. You're much more interested in coming up with something that'll drive traffic to your website.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, especially back then, like we could have changed the name many times. We just decided to stick with it. We've done a lot of our own sort of viral marketing, if you want to call it that. When it comes to our branding, the company is pretty well known on the internet these days. We've helped a lot of people, some out of the goodness of our hearts for some publicity, others just because, you know, it was a good fit for us in terms of financially as well as the type of experience that we had working with these clients. It was very rewarding.
You offered to work for free for some of the biggest names on the internet as a way of building your reputation. I can't imagine that Guy Kawasaki or TechCrunch paid you, right? You guys worked with them as a way of proving yourselves and doing it with two of the biggest names on the internet.
Yeah, so there's a couple things that I can add or, you know, kind of describe about that. One is that some of them did pay us for certain things. Some of them didn't. At first, we approached a lot of these bloggers and said we'd offer the help for free in exchange for our branding being on their site, saying that we helped them. And we had to prove ourselves in that way, especially, I mean, this wasn't even in the beginning of our company because we already had clients in business. We just wanted to definitely make our stance and say that, hey, you know, we know how to do this stuff, and some of the most respected people, at least in the Web 2.0 world, are, you know, willing to let us help them. So some of them are paid, actually. Some of them are not. In the beginning, they were not paid, and we've at this point reached about, I think, 30 or 40% of the Technorati top 100 in terms of doing that service. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of them have our logo on there, and a lot of them don't. So,
30 to 40% of the top bloggers have used you guys to help them get traffic.
Yes, absolutely.
What is viral marketing?
I feel like it's a loaded question mm-hmm. at this point, just because a lot of people think of it in a lot of different ways. One thing I can say in the kind of content world would be that viral marketing is the spreading of content online in a kind of organic fashion. And what that means in my in my world, or in my case, would be you use a certain site or a set of sites online to seed the content, and from there it spreads across many other sites or, you know, many other viewers or people.
I did an interview with the CEO of Buzz Agents, Dave Balter, and he said that a lot of these videos that spread virally just do it because it's just luck. Somebody sits in front of his webcam, starts doing the Una Muna song, and boom, it takes off. And there's no way to really predict something like that. But you're saying that there are ways to predict what kinds of videos are going to start spreading, and there are ways to predict what kinds of content in general starts to spread, right?
Yeah, so I think what he's saying, he makes a very valid point by what he's saying, but at the same time, that would mean that nobody can actually create content on purpose that can spread, right? And I don't want to say I completely believe that, you know, everything is random. So, yeah, there are random things like the Numa Numa song, but there are also a lot of things that were, you know, kind of like the College Humor example, where these people are creating this content specifically to make it viral. And I think it's like, it's more about just knowing the types of things people would like to spread. Usually, you know, very humorous, entertaining sort of things that kind of, a lot of times when they write on a certain meme or a certain thing that's going on right now, they can spread pretty fast. So if someone, you know, if someone did a spoof about, you know, Obama or something like that, it's likely to spread if it's done right. I mean, generally, we can look at something and kind of give an idea to a client or a friend or whatever of whether it's worthy of spreading. And this just has to do with understanding the different audiences. Because, you know, another point about this is, you know, a lot of this content is niche content where it'll only spread on certain sites, or it only has the potential to spread on certain sites. Like if something tends to be a little bit more geek heavy, it's probably likely to do well on Gig. If it's even more geeky and more programming oriented and stuff like that, Reddit might be the place for it. A lot of times political stuff gets up on Reddit as well. So it's really just about understanding the different audiences and matching them up with the type of content you have on your site or the type of content you might be able to create.
So what are some of the things that we need to know if we want to make our content viral?
My biggest tip, more than anything else, would be get on Dig, get on Delicious, check out StumbleUpon, look at what's been popular just to study the content that exists on these sites in your category, because then you'll get an understanding, you'll have some feeling and understanding of the audiences online at that place or at that site that are, you know, likely to kind of dig the type of content that you might want to produce. And it'll also give you a better understanding of the type of content you should be producing, because you can see what's been popular.
So I'm building a website here where I'm going to do interviews with people who are going to teach me how to build a better internet company. I interview you. I talk to you about how I interviewed the CEO of Buzz Agent. These are the kinds of people who I'm interviewing. How do I make my content more viral?
A lot of times, like, there's sensationalist headlines that you can mm-hmm. kind of create. So if you said that I reveal the top 10 secrets about viral marketing, that has a chance to get up there just by the fact that you titled it properly, even if I don't reveal anything about it. So in your specific example, I mean, one idea, which is the obvious one, would be interview Kevin Rose. Mm-hmm. You know, that'll get on Dig,
right?
Because he's the creator of Dig, right? Now, I know that's a bit obvious, but that's one idea. I mean, because you're kind of interview focused, you have to, it's more about who you're interviewing and what knowledge you're getting out of them, right? So matching up that knowledge with what people want to hear about on Dig. That's why I bring up the Kevin Rose example, but there might be other examples, like, you know, if you got at some executive at Google and, you know, got them to actually say something that, you know, normally people wouldn't hear. So I think for your specific type of content, it's going to be a little bit tricky unless you actually get some interesting tidbit out of these people. And because it's very people-focused, you'd want to find people that the dig audience would really like to hear.
All right. A popular technique on the internet now is to have a blog post that says the 7 secrets of something. So let's you and I see if we can create the 7 secrets of making your content viral. And one of those secrets is to use a number in your title.
Well, that's one way to go about it. Sure. Let's say one of the secrets is using a number in your title. I'm fine with that.
Okay. What else is there?
The second one is really understanding your audience and matching that up with the type of content you're creating.
If you have techie content, go to Dig. If it's even techier than techie, go to Reddit. And if you have something that's more business, go to Y Combinator's news site and submit it there.
You got it.
Okay, so know your audience. Let's see if I've got here in my notes something else that you said. Title's important. Copy what's popular out there.
Yeah, copy or learn from. I'd say learn from is better than copying, and that kind of falls into our number two, but it is a separate thing, which would be really take time to study your category on these social sites. So, and stumble upon, if you're a gaming site, look at the gaming category and see the type of content that becomes popular on there. Same with Delicious. Look at the things that have the most bookmarks that are related to gaming. On Dig, look at the gaming category and look at, you know, all the popular things. And you'll learn a lot by doing that. You'll learn the type of titles that you should be creating. You'll learn the type of descriptions, and you'll learn about the type of content you should be creating. So if anything, that would be my number one recommendation.
Go to where you want your stuff to spread virally and just keep studying it. Keep reading it. Keep looking for clues. And in fact, if you keep reading it, it seems to me that the commonalities will pop out at you.
And I'll go even one further. The most successful companies that are able to kind of entrench themselves in this world and become brands on these sites, they have accounts on these sites, and they're able to really join in on the community. So they're commenting on other people's, like if it was a gaming site, they're commenting on other people's gaming submissions, right? They're submitting other sites, not just their own. I mean, they're really getting into the community. They're understanding the community. At the end of the day, I think it's like when it comes to viral marketing, whether it's a content end or the tuning and analytics end, metrics end, I would say you need dedicated people in your company to understand this stuff. And you know, that's honestly, it's not the hardest thing to do because there's a lot of young people these days that are really into this type of stuff. And so, you know, that's a perfect way. I mean, if someone's looking for a job, that's a perfect way to get a job as well. If you understand these social sites, a lot of people are looking to leverage them. And this is based on, obviously, my own consulting experience, but also talking to a lot of friends and seeing what they're doing in companies. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I see friends of mine that are really good friends of mine, able to leverage these sites much better than even clients of ours. And that's not because we're not giving these people the same knowledge. It's just because there's a lot of reiteration going on when it comes to my friends because I hang out with them a lot, right? Well, with a client, it's like there's only so far you can go. And even trying to tell them this stuff and convince them to do some of these things is really tough just because they don't want to understand. They just want to pay you and, you know, have you do it for them. And I understand and respect that, but at the same time, you know, if you're relying upon these tactics for your business, you should definitely have someone that understands these things in-house.
So you're saying that an important piece of this is to be a part of the community. You're telling me, Andrew, your company or whatever company wants to do this needs to go in and comment on other people's submissions, needs to submit other people's sites so that not everything being submitted is self-serving and needs to be a part of the community. Yeah. And you're saying hire somebody to do this. So if I were looking to hire someone, I could probably bring in a student for maybe $15 an hour, doesn't even have to be in my office here, and they just become a part of the community for me.
As long as they understand what that means and you can tell them what that means, because a lot of times people think they just go in and do silly comments or, you know, do like, you know, one word comments and things like that and get away with it, but I don't think that that's going to work. That doesn't really work. What happens is people end up just voting your comments down and you end up being, black flagged or flagged as a, you know, black, like, you know, like what I mean is like a dark member of the community, somebody that nobody else wants to associate with.
Basically. So you've got to watch out who you put on this thing because they're really the face of your company with one of the most influential groups on the internet.
You got it. Yeah. Okay. So the last thing you want to do is become one of those members that, you know, nobody respects or everybody thinks is just out there for themselves.
Let's suppose that I don't want to be a top user on these sites, but I do want to be a part of the community and I want to do it myself without hiring someone else. How long would I have to spend on these communities per day? We're talking about 10 minutes a day, go in, submit, and check off other people's submissions and comment, or we mean 2 or 3 hours a day?
I'd say even if you don't want to be a top user, I don't think it's about necessarily being a top user. I think it's just about if you immerse yourself in the community, you're going to understand much more about it, right? And then you'll understand what people hate, what people like, and that'll help you create compelling content. So I would say if you spent about a half hour to an hour a day, 5 to 7 days a week, and did that for a month, you're going to get a really good idea of what type of content gets up there, what type of things people hate, what type of things people like. And from there, you're almost off to the races, especially if you just focus in on your category. Because a lot of these social sites are very categorical. So people are kind of, you know, focused in on whatever interests them. So, you know, when it comes to environmentalism, there's a lot of people on Dig that are very into that, and they won't really dig or look at any other things. You know, and that's the way Dig has kind of organized the site as well, if you've taken a look at some of the latest changes, which obviously everyone has. My suggestion would be it's not 10 minutes, it's more like half hour to hour, because you really want to focus on understanding the audience.
It will really pay off for me as a business person. You know, there's so many other things that you could be doing with your time. You have to pay the bills, you have to go out looking for sponsors, you have to go out looking for new users. But you're telling me that an hour a day that I spend on this will come back to me in traffic?
If you think that this is going to be a major source of traffic for you, or if you think that there's a benefit in doing this. I mean, another example would be, let's say you're kind of, you know, you're doing these interviews, right? It would be really good if other blogs linked to your interviews, right?
Right.
So what would be your approach there? It would be the same. You'd go comment on these other blogs. You'd kind of go up on the totem pole in terms of your level of visibility with the people that write and run these blogs, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it's the same tactic. There's nothing different about it.
So you're saying this isn't for everybody to work this viral network out there isn't for everybody, but if you decide that this is for you, for your business, for your website, then this is what you need to do. You need to spend an hour a day on this 7 days a week, or hire somebody who's going to be spending at least that much time on it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And you know, a lot of times, like, what we end up doing for clients is just helping them understand the type of content that they should get up there. Like, they might already have people writing content, but their content writers might not really understand the type of content that gets up there. And a lot of these companies, they have the money to pay for the consulting on that. So we'll go in there and help them understand and train their writers on how to get, you know, how to kind of write the right type of stories, write the type of stories that the audiences want to kind of hear about, learn about, and things like that. So in the same way, if you're a smaller business, I would recommend doing this all yourself. There isn't anything we do that I can say is magical, you know, or is special or is a trick. And all these tactics I'm talking about are more about longevity. They're not about your, you know, kind of just get up on Dig once and you're happy just because you want more ad revenue for that week. You know, we're not really, you know, I'm not here to kind of promote those type of tactics. I don't really agree with them too much. I agree with, you know, really having a sustainable strategy, just like with SEO. If you're going to do some of the tricks, there's a chance that, you know, you're going to get caught up. Your site's going to get banned by Google, and someone's not going to like you there. And that's not really a good thing, especially because Google has a majority of the search. And the same goes for the social sites. Like, you don't want to piss anyone off. You don't want to be the one-hit wonder. You actually want to have a kind of, you know, more long-term strategy with these sites. And it's the same with, you know, again, I'll go back to the blogging thing. Like, if you want other bloggers to link to you, you're going to have to appeal to them somehow. One is to create compelling content, but at the same time, if you've already done your work beforehand and these people already know about your site, they might have already added it to their RSS reader. So then when you put out something truly interesting, they'll link to it because they think it's interesting and they have already heard of you or heard of your blog and are, you know, kind of open to helping you spread it.
Okay, so we've got four techniques here. What else do we need to know?
Honestly, there might not be seven.
There may not be seven things. Cover. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like mm-hmm. So I'll just run through a few things besides numbers that work.
Yeah.
So lists obviously are good, so that's numbering things on your titles and your blog posts. Another one would be adjectives, so like sort of, you know, being sensationalist about it, using sensationalism to kind of appeal to the audiences. Figures, numbers, so like statistical stuff. So if you write, like, you know, there's been a couple of posts about, you know, measuring the different social sites based on Google's new search insight tool. That's pretty in-depth. So a lot of people, I've seen a lot of those articles get spread pretty easily because people are just, you know, all into numbers and stats. And another one would be like media types. So it would be like pictures, audio, video, and interactive things. Could be even flash games and things like that that are very kind of, you know, that appeal to audiences. So, I mean, one of the things is like let's say you were doing a post that was like, you know, the top 10 action movie scenes of all time, right? The key isn't just to write the title and then put 10 videos on the page. That's not necessarily going to work. It used to work before, but it doesn't work anymore. The audience is kind of blind and almost numb to those type of things. What they really want to hear is that you've got something interesting to say. So, you know, you have a good starter paragraph where you describe why you made this list or why this list is important, right, and why it's so exciting. And maybe you give a quick, you know, kind of a quick preview of the type of your reasoning behind choosing these, right? And then for each video, you should give a short one or two sentence description that's unique. That way, you know, people don't think you're just slapping a bunch of videos on a page and trying to get on dig, and you're actually trying to provide value for these, you know, for the viewers. So that's kind of my tips, which is like, you know, go a little more in depth. Don't just think you can slap something up and try it out. And you know what? These are all types of things. These are all the things that someone would learn if they actually paid attention and looked at all the content in their category that's popular on Dig. Because you'll realize that, like, when someone posts, like, I'd even look at content that didn't get up there but got a lot of digs, or didn't get up there and didn't get many digs, and just try to understand the type of comments that that users are making on these videos. They'll tell you a lot about what they like and what they don't like.
Those comments get so out of control that I've avoided them, but you're right. By reading them, you can get a sense of what people are excited about and what they're turned off to.
I mean, it's just like YouTube. You can do the same on YouTube. You want to figure out how to become popular on YouTube? Go check out the popular content and try to understand why it's popular. Don't just look at something and be like, oh, that guy's just talking on the screen. You know? It's like, yeah, he's talking on the screen, but people like him. Look at what people are saying about him. Go back to his first ever video. See how many views that's gotten. See how many comments it got. You know, like, really try to understand what's really going on with this content. And I think there's no shortcut. That's why I'm saying I might not have 7 tips, because there is no shortcut. If I wanted to give you shortcuts, then this would be a different interview. It would be, you know, I'd be trying to be a snake oil salesman and sell people on my service or something like that, you know, versus really just being genuine about it. At the end of the day, it's like the real world. I mean, the more honest, genuine, and trustworthy you are, the more people will like you and help you out.
And the reason that you're able to help your clients is that you're a part of this community and you know it so well that you can speak for them, or you can show them how to speak for themselves based on what you've learned.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you want to talk on an individual basis, but it's also our company. Everyone in the company has accounts on these sites. Everyone in the company, you know, kind of spends this hour or two or more a day just trolling these sites, looking around, submitting content, you know, commenting on other people's things. And it's all just because we want to have that understanding. We want to make sure that we understand all this. And again, back to the SEO example, we've always tried to stay on the up and up with our client sites. Obviously, we've done experiments both on social media and SEO that are our own personal experiments just to see how far we could push the envelope. But at the end of the day, with our clients, it's more about really helping them learn, how not to get screwed, or how not to think of, you know, it's like, again, like, how not to think of bad tactics and how to really focus in on the good tactics and the good quality content. An example from the SEO world would be that, you know, a lot of times I'll talk to someone about SEO and they'll be like, oh, what if we just create 20 sites that are related to our site and, you know, we create them and we link back to our main site? And I'm like, Google's going to figure that out. You know, they'll figure that out faster than you can blink your eye. You know what I mean? And it's those type of things that people, you know, don't understand. And the social media world is a little more complex than that, where the rules are not as clear. And I think the only way you're going to really understand them is by really, you know, kind of getting into the community and understanding it.
Okay, what if we go beyond content now and start talking a little bit about tools? It seems to me that there are some tools that help your site become more viral. For example, when I sign up to Facebook and it right afterwards allows me to grab all my email addresses out of my Gmail inbox, and then it tells me which of those people are members of Facebook and allows me to invite the ones who aren't members, that's a pretty smart and easy viral tactic, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Are there any other?
I don't know about easy, because the reason you do it on Facebook is because some of your friends are already on Facebook, and Facebook gives you a really compelling reason to do it, right? Now, if I just popped out of sight out of nowhere and nobody's on it, and I send you the, you know, and I put you on this Find Your Friends sort of scraper, email scraper, or contact list importer, however you want to say it, you're not going to find any of your friends, and you're going to be like, well, my friends already aren't on here, and now it's asking me to invite all my friends. Why should I do that, right? So you need a really good compelling reason. So here's an example. Let's say YouTube had a scraper or has one of these contact importers. I don't think they do, last I checked, but let's say they did. Let's say I put up a video. Like, I signed up, they didn't send me to this thing, but I uploaded a video. Then YouTube told me, hey, don't you want your friends to see it? And then they asked me to go through the contact kind of importer and get all my friends in there. That is possibly a compelling reason for me to go ahead and invite all my friends, because I really want them to see my video, right?
You're right, and I don't think that they've done that. And as far as I know now, Dig doesn't do that either. If I dig something, it doesn't make it easy for me to go tell my friends to dig it.
Actually, it kind of does. You can, one, well, not through email, but you have an invite mechanism where you can just invite someone to dig just normally whenever you want. Mm-hmm. But they do have a share feature. So let's say I friended a ton of people on Dig. After I dig something, I can hit the share button and send it to all those friends and say, hey, and I'm sorry, it's called shout. I think they use two words for it, but it's basically I can shout that Dig to all my friends, and they allow me to do that. But that's friends that I already have on Dig.
All right, but we can make a compelling argument to our users for why they should tell their friends, why they should allow us to scrape their contacts and allow us to email their contacts. So, for example, you create a game, an SEO game that you told me about. What was it called? SEO Smackdown?
Search Engine Smackdown.
Search Engine Smackdown. You create Search Engine Smackdown. I play it. At the end of the game, at the very least, you can say, do you want to send this game to your friends and allow me to grab my contacts out of my Gmail account? But you can also say, do you want to challenge your friends? And now I really have a compelling reason to go send it to my friends if I've done well, right?
So that's the mechanism that works really well on Facebook, just because all your friends are right there, and you don't need to scrape emails or anything to get to them. All you have to do is, you know, challenge them, and Facebook and the developer that built the game takes care of the rest, right? So an example would be Bowling Buddies. It's a game by Playfish, which is one of the pretty well-known game companies on Facebook. And they have this game where I go bowling. It's kind of like Wii Bowling. It's pretty interactive, pretty cool. It's pretty easy, too. And, you know, when I get my score, it asks me if I want to challenge my friends. And then when I challenge my friends, I invite them into the game. They play it, and then I get a notification if they beat my score. And then I come back and play it. So that's the type of kind of viral marketing or viral loop that can be created on Facebook. And the same type of viral loop can be created on a website as well using, you know, the contact importer and things like that.
Okay, so...
And I think the...
Mm-hmm, go ahead,
yeah,
please.
Go ahead. Oh, the most savviest companies out there have exploited that or taken advantage of that to its maximum.
All right, so here's what I've got. We need to know about the contact importer. And the contact importer allows anyone who has allows anyone to just grab their email addresses easily from their email program. We also need to be aware of challenge. That's a very powerful technique for getting people to show your stuff to their friends. So anywhere where you can build something and that a user can interact with and then challenge his friends, they're more likely to pass it on. And we should be thinking of what can we do to make our stuff more of a challenge. And I'll give you a great example of somebody who's doing this well. Edufire, a friend of mine's company. It's a website where you can learn a language. They made their site more viral by allowing you to play a game where you try to translate words from foreign languages. And after you're done with that, they let you challenge your friends. So even a website that's not competitive can add this challenge element. Another thing we need to be aware of, it seems, is show off. Find ways for your users to want to show off what they created on your site. So
absolutely.
It might be you put a picture up, you're going to want to show it off. You make a design on my website, you're going to want to show it off. So I need to let you find a reason to show it off.
Well, I mean, an example, you know, a great example of that would be taking, you know, people uploading a YouTube video, and, you know, instead of emailing it to their friends, they just embed it on their blog, right?
Right, exactly. And that's another example of people wanting to show off what they've created.
And I'm actually friends with John at Edufire,
uh-huh.
And I think the stuff that they're doing is pretty interesting when it comes to the game they created and things like that. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, whether it's the, you know, content-based or the metrics and analytics kind of based, and the reason I say it's metrics and analytics is because you really want to measure how many people are actually going through your contact importer, going through challenging people and things like that to really understand how to kind of improve the experience. Either way, it's just about getting creative. Because who would have thought that Edufire could have came up with a game, right?
Right. And
really, they did.
But they did, yeah.
I'm sure it's compelling.
And they did more than just come up with a game. Because a game I could play by myself, and I'd be done. What they did was they allowed me to challenge. So then I had to go to my girlfriend and say, all right, we know a little bit of Spanish. Here's the score I got. Now let's see if you can beat me. And that made it much more viral.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And then, you know, games are one of the biggest things that can go viral like that.
Okay, I got more here. I'm thinking out loud with you, and let's see if we can put together a list of even 7 things that we need to know if we're creating tools that we want to go viral. Or stuff, I want to think beyond content. Another thing is communication. If a website allows me to communicate in any way, I'm gonna have to tell other people about it. And I've got a great example of that. My dad signed up for Skype because he heard that you could make free phone calls. He had no ability to speak to anybody on Skype, so it was useless. He told his friends about it. They were too old to figure out Skype. I come over to his house after he's had this on his computer for a while. I see him with the second laptop. I say, Dad, what are you doing with the second laptop? He goes, oh, it's my cousin's laptop. I'm installing it and showing him how to use Skype on his computer because I've got to be able to use this with somebody. So anything with communication, people are going to go out of their way to introduce to other people and spread virally. Is that a little bit of a rant that I just went on, Heaton?
No. That was great. I love it. I think... That's a very valid point. Skype is one of the biggest, you know, examples of viral marketing, if you want to call it that. That's a great example. And that's almost, it's not even something that I'd say they even, I'm not saying the Skype people didn't imagine, but think about it. Your dad's actually going into the real world, getting someone else's computer and installing Skype on it, right? He's not just inviting them into Skype. He's literally going through the process like that I might go through with my father, for example, if I want to use Skype with him, right?
Right.
He's actually teaching people how to use Skype, which is, I mean, that's like a total extra step. One, it's not measurable, and two, it's almost not predictable.
Right, because they were creating a tool that's meant for communication, he had to get others to do it. Whether he went that far out of his way and installed it on their computer or just sent them an email saying they should install Skype, they wouldn't have been able to predict, as you said. But as soon as they created a system that was meant for communication, they were creating something that needed to spread virally.
Absolutely.
What else is there? I've got 3 here, and it seems like the magic number is 7.
Sure. So let's review those 3 first, so I don't repeat them.
Challenge. If you allow your people to challenge, they're gonna be more likely to spread things virally. Show off. If you allow your users to create something that they'll want to show to their friends, they're gonna spread it virally. Communication. Sure. Anything that they have to talk with, any tool that's meant for talking communication is gonna spread virally. Shoot, there's got to be more. What other sites are there out there that are really viral? Points. All right, all I can think of is these 3. And then the next thing is to give them the tools to make it easy. And one of those tools is the contact importer. Another one of those tools is an easy button to let them post it on Facebook and other
Dig
sites.
And
Dig
stuff.
And Delicious.
And another thing would be have an embed strategy. So if you're Flickr, you let people create embeddable slideshows. If you're YouTube, you let people embed videos. If you're SlideShare, you let people embed PowerPoint. That gives you also the ability to, you know, kind of get click-throughs from the embed back to your site. So that's a pretty strong branding and viral marketing strategy as well. And so, yeah, so that, I'd say that would be number 4, which is give them easy to use tools.
Let's think of some of the sites out there that are easy to that have spread virally. Flickr, part of the reason for Flickr is that you could embed their slideshow. Another reason is that you were showing off what you created.
Same with YouTube, basically.
YouTube too. Facebook was about, I think Facebook was about communication. I think there was
just
also
like
some kind of challenge with Facebook too to see who had the most friends. MySpace was about creating your site. All right, I'm gonna add one other one. You tell me if this makes sense.
Go for it.
I think make it useless unless it's viral. I mean, really go balls out. You cannot use Facebook unless all your friends use it. You cannot use Skype unless your friends use it. Make it absolutely critical.
Yeah, that
they
use
it.
Friends use it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll go for that one. And I think we're actually only at 5 now. So I actually thought of a 6th one, which is sort of like let people share something, but I think I'm going to call it this. I'm going to say feed the ego, right?
Feed the ego, okay.
And it goes back to the challenging stuff as well, but it's a little bit of a twist on it. So let me give you an example. So I was thinking of like something that's not so consumer-oriented, at least inherently, and I thought of FeedBurner. So one of the things that helped FeedBurner spread was the fact that people could put that little FeedBurner chiclet on their site, right? And it was really an ego boost because a lot of, you know, even TechCrunch and Mashable and all those guys, they got into these competitions about who had the most RSS subscribers, right? And the same goes for, like, I'd even see it when, you know, there were spikes on the chiclet because of some issue that FeedBurner had, I think, with Net5s and some other sites and some measurement issues. People would start freaking out and they'd start talking about it. And it all had to do because, you know, their egos were either hurt or boosted because of this tool.
I agree with you. And that is absolutely important. You're right. And that's different from challenging. Challenging is more like I get a point and now I want to see if you can get 2 points. You're right. You're right.
This is very public. It's not as private, right? It's like this number's publicly there. It's like, and it's almost like the old days of, you know, the little site stat counters and things like that where you say, hey, this is how many people visit my site. Like, I'm sure a lot of people put those on GeoCities just to get, whether it's a good feeling for visitors, they would get a good feeling out of it because they'd see that number go up. Humans love seeing numbers go up, especially numbers that are related to them, right?
Yeah, so...
Unless obviously they're the bounce rate of a site or something like that, those should be going down.
You know what, I signed up for Constant Contact and AWeber to manage my email mailing list. I don't think they have a badge that shows me my number of subscribers. If they did, I'd want to show it to my users so they'd see how fast my mailing list is growing.
And that has such a no, I don't want to say exponential, but such a strong effect because then a user sees a number, they're like, oh, there's a number there? I want to be part of that number. I really like this guy's site, right?
Yeah.
So it's things like that. Like, there's a lot of motivation there, and I think it's just more about personal satisfaction, ego, feeding it, things like that.
Hit me with number 7. What is number 7?
Yeah, so number 7, I'm going to focus on something very focused on a business, which would be if you're going to use these type of viral marketing tactics, and this even extends to the content, you want to track everything. Because if you're not able to track it, you're not able to manage it or improve it. So an example would be, let's say you're using a contact importer. You want to know how many people are inviting other people through your system. How many people are skipping the importer, right? And how can you encourage these people through copy, button color, text, whatever it may be, or even images, to get them to kind of increase, to get it so that users are inviting people more and inviting more of them. So I think, you know, if you're measuring all the steps in your kind of flow, you're able to kind of improve because you know where things are weak. And then, you know, same goes for, like, let's say an embed strategy. So you'd want to know how many people, you know, like, measure up how many people are actually embedding things on other sites. What are the type of sites that bring you the most traffic back to your site? Is it blogger blogs? Is it forums? Things like that. And that way you can understand where to kind of focus your efforts. So I'd say tracking, measurement, and things like that are probably, you know, my number one, which would be if you're going to have these type of strategies, make sure that almost before you even kind of implement the strategy, you know what you should be tracking and how to track it.
I think this is brilliant. And I think now anyone can take these ideas here that we have and add it to their website and make their sites more viral. And as we used the Edufire example, if they could make their stuff more viral by using these techniques, and they identified it before they heard this call, so it's not because of us, but if they could do it, then anyone could take their website and use these techniques and make them more viral.
Absolutely, and I think we're going to see more and more of this because this is kind of the way to go because it just makes it so that the web becomes more social, and that's just where everything's heading. I like it, so I'm not going to say whether we like it or not.
Well, thank you. I love it. I'm so grateful to you for coming on the phone with me. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye.